One and a community connection on the way next, brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church and by Tallgrass Motors. I have the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning on a community connection talking with Tim Harris. He is candidate for the 1st Congressional District. And Tim, you and I are talking for a couple of reasons. First of all, you are trying to get your information, your name out there. One could say election is not until November of next year. On the other hand, there is a possibility that Congressman Bridenstine could still be named to a job with NASA, so that election could be coming a lot sooner.
If he does, and I pray that he does, because I think that would be excellent for the American people. He got on, as a junior congressman, he got on the science committee that led him to the basis of knowledge that he now has that will make him a very qualified candidate to be the director of NASA. So pray that God's, you know, will be done there. But that could cause a special election. And if that happens quickly and he gets through the confirmation process in Senate, we could actually have a special election that actually could end up in the fall of this year. It actually could be November or December. But then you re-up and file for the seat in April with a June primary. So it's kind of a marathon. So June of next year will definitely be the primary, possible runoff in August, and then in November the general. And Jim Bridenstine is self-terminated by his own choice. So the end of 2018, he will be done as our congressman, no matter how you cut that. And so, you know, I have public service in my background, 28 years in the district attorney's office, mm-hmm. and 16 as the elected district attorney. I have the negotiation skills and the statesmanship that I think the country needs to break the gridlock that we see in Washington, D.C. I don't need to go there because I don't need a job. I'm going there not to become something, but to do something. From the Porter Peach Festival to Tulsa to up here in Bartlesville, a lot of feedback that I get from the people is they've had it, right? They've had it with politicians that promise a whole lot and don't do anything. And so, you know, I don't think people say, well, you know, what can one man do or one woman do? I say, well, we can be the start of the solution to the problem. And I really believe that if this is what we're hearing in Oklahoma, that there are other states in the United States where Americans are fed up with the status quo. And I think in the mid-elections of 2018 in November, I think there's going to be some new blood. And hopefully that new blood we can join together and do what I talk about. Let's break the political correctness. Let's begin the dialogue. Let's debate again in a bipartisan way and come to some solutions for the American people, because we're all there as public servants serving a constituency back home. And you know what? Safety and having good jobs and health care and good education for your children. I don't care if you put a D or an R or an I behind your name. Those are American wants and desires. That's what we call the American dream. Those are the kinds of things that we have to be fighting for to break the gridlock and actually serve the people of Oklahoma in the 1st District, to be their voice, but also for all Americans. And so that public service is in my heart. It has been, and that's what I want to go do for the people of the 1st District.
You mentioned your experience as a district attorney, and I think we think of DAs primarily as a law enforcement officer, as a prosecutor, bringing criminals to the justice system to be prosecuted. And yet you also mentioned negotiations, and sometimes we lose track of that negotiation, number one, that goes out, that goes on in the hallway just before the defendant goes on trial. You walk up to the defendant's, or to the attorney for the defendant, and you say, the jury's sitting in there, here's your chance, let's negotiate one last time.
Well, hopefully my assistants that I trained for 16 years did it before the eve of trial, but it is. We filed 12,000 criminal cases a year when I was district attorney. It just happens to be a 50-50 split, about 6,000 felonies and about 6,000 misdemeanors. At the felony level, in the 16 years I was DA, I don't think we ever tried more than 107 felony cases in any given year. So what that says to me is negotiation to achieve justice. And I always used to say, I don't like plea bargaining. This isn't Kmart and there isn't a blue light special that happens. But training my assistants to understand that the victim's definition of justice, and you have an ethical duty as a prosecutor to make sure the constitutional rights of the defendant are upheld, well, he or she has a definition of justice. The community, in their idea of public safety and what justice is there. And a lot of people don't think about this. There's a fourth entity, and that is the law enforcement agency that did the investigation. Believe me, they have an idea of what they think justice is. And so literally, you're learning how to negotiate more cases than you are trying just by the sheer volume. And so trying to come up with justice of the community with those four balls in the air, I think that's the kind of a background that differentiates me from the other candidates who are running, is I've spent a career negotiating. Those are the skills that we need in Washington, because you have all these competing forces who have different opinions on different ideas, and you have to be able to juggle those balls and try and come up, when I was in law enforcement, to come up with what justice is, and in this case, what is good policy, what is good law for the majority of the people that you can serve, while having an open ear to all the different entities that you serve. So as and I'm proud of this, you know, I'm a Christian, conservative Republican, but you know what, if you're a liberal Democrat, that does not make you my enemy. Now, I'm probably not going to embrace your political ideology, but that doesn't make you an enemy. And so I've kind of divided things up into what I call principles and priorities versus preferences. You never walk away from the non-negotiables: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and all the freedoms and liberties that flow from that. But on the preferences, you have to be willing to come to the table to talk and negotiate, take one step closer to the center to try and come up with solutions. And, you know, maybe some people listening to me say, oh, he's just a rhino. I don't see it that way. I see that we have to break the gridlock of not talking to one another and not looking at each other as an enemy, but coming with a mandate from the people to actually work through to come up with solutions in a very complex world we live in for the people that sent us to Washington, and that's what I want to do.
And so what I think I hear you saying, and I'm paraphrasing and extending a little bit, what I think I hear you saying is that you will run on certain campaign principles, certain party platform ideas, and the people should and will hold you accountable. How well did you meet what you said you're going to do?
You know, and it's like promises. Boy, I tell you, that's kind of a difficult word. This is what I stand for, you know. My biblical base is my moral compass, and so that kind of guides my decision making. But with that, I understand, as a Christian, we live in a pluralistic society, right? And I think the framers of the Constitution, the First Amendment, when they said Congress shall not establish a religion nor prohibit the free exercise thereof, that is a two-way street. That's not only Christianity, but that's all the other religions. I would preface this that they have to be supportive of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if they aren't, then those freedoms don't necessarily, that's not a free ticket to practice whatever you want. And, you know, that goes to the fact that, you know, part of my platform is safety and security. You know, I grew up when Nikita Khrushchev was the president of Russia, and I'll never forget, he stood at a podium and took off his shoe and was pounding the podium with his shoe. And I looked at my dad, and I was pretty upset, to be truthful. And I said, Dad, he's talking about burying us, because he said, we will bury you, right? Well, you know, in the Cold War, we kind of knew who the enemy was. Now we kind of live in a different world where the enemy doesn't wear a uniform. They dress like civilians. And United States of America will always be the melting pot, you know, e pluribus unum, you know, out of many one. But we have to make sure that we have a vetting process as we bring people into this country, that they're here because they want to become Americans. That doesn't mean you leave your ethnicity or your culture behind, and nor have we done that in the past. But they have to come here wanting to become an America, supporting the American principles in our Constitution, in our preamble, and in the Declaration of Independence. And if they do that, then their pluralistic view will be fought for just as much as any other, including my Christianity. And so I understand that, you know, we are there for just more than just myself as a Christian. I will fight for others' freedom of their practice of religion also.
You mentioned the term melting pot, which is something that you and I more or less are contemporaries as far as age and things we learned in school. When you and I were going to school, growing up in the era of the 50s, 60s, we the traditional viewpoint was that we welcomed immigrants, and they in turn assimilated, became part of that amalgamation that is the American citizen. In general, while my grandparents still spoke Italian in the home, particularly when my grandmother was mad at my grandfather, but they learned English, they spoke English, the everyday life. We find a lot of the population now, that native language, whatever it might be, is more than just spoken in the home. There is a reluctance, I'm not sure that's the best word to use, but it's what I came up with, to remain pluralistic in language.
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're a pluralistic society that has always, you know, welcomed immigrants. I mean, you know, you stand at the Statue of Liberty, you know, give me your huddled masses. But I think the mindset was...
Which was part of a fundraiser to raise money for the pedestal, because the French didn't give us the pedestal.
But I think they came with a mindset of, I want to become an American.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I don't know that we see that anymore, which is the change, the cultural change, the differentiation. It's kind of like, if I speak a different language, I'm just going to stay with my different language. I'm going to benefit from all the economic opportunity that I receive here in the United States, but I'm not going to kind of matriculate. I'm not going to become an American with some of the same basis of what we believe in, the values and the freedoms and the liberties. Just, I think it kind of get lost somewhere along the line. And so if you're here just to bleed us from the benefits that you get, that's not becoming an American, in my opinion, right? And I think that's kind of what is breaking down internally some of the interactions that we see between cultures and ethnicities. And again, the Constitution, we've gone far afield of our constitutional mandates about the articles, and we have these amendments to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that protect our individual rights. But there is this balance of power between the judiciary and the legislative and the executive. And, I mean, the framers of the Constitution were such wise individuals, they realized that there had to be a balance of power in the separation of the powers, what they called checks and balances, to make sure the executive didn't have too much power and that the legislature could hold them at bay, and then the judiciary was there to make sure that we did it constitutionally. You know, I think it's been copied by more countries on the face of the globe as a modern document than any other legal document that's been drafted, and yet the pendulum has kind of swung away from following this document as the governance foundation from what our Declaration of Independence talked about from a heartfelt, and then what is the blocking and tackling to get that done, and that's in our Constitution, and we need to get back to follow it. And the ship that is listening and taking on water, I want to fight to try and get that thing upright again and get some wind back in our sails, become the economic driver for the rest of the world. And I really believe free enterprise will do that. We need to take off so many of the overregulations that we have in the marketplace today and let business solve some of our internal problems, and let that model of free enterprise, which also was supported by the framers of the Constitution. And you know, before we started, we were just talking about socialism having another absolute blow up like in Venezuela, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
I mean, we have another case in point, and Bernie Sanders, I hope you're listening to this, socialism doesn't work. And I love the statement that Margaret Thatcher made. She says, socialism works until the other guy's money runs out.
Yeah.
And you know, we look at that, and what is misunderstood in all that is, you know, if one guy or gal is working really hard and the other is a slackard, socialism says equal outcome. I'm going to give you both the same. Well, you know what? Sooner or later, the guy or gal that's working really hard that doesn't get any more for their efforts isn't going to put that kind of effort into it when the sluggard and the slackard gets the same as they get. It's then that it begins to implode upon itself, and we cannot have that here in the United States.
Right? And a contemporary of Margaret Thatcher, and I believe a good friend of Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, tried to emphasize that the promise of America is equal opportunity, not necessarily equal outcome.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the greatest nation on the face of the globe, we give more people opportunity here, and it is the American ingenuity that is the driving force that through my creativity and through my hard work, I get to benefit from what was produced. The rest of the world marvels at that, right? And yet, I think that's why they all want to be like us from an economic standpoint of view, because that mindset creates more freedoms for people in the marketplace to be successful. It encourages that creative thought to think outside the box. And of course, you know, small business. I mean, when I was district attorney, you know, we had a bogus check program, and we gave back over $1 million a year to small business on bogus check funds, because I know the profit margin for small business is very, very small, and that one or two bogus checks that they got just drains their profit. We have to make sure that we are an economic engine that continues to give small business the tools that they need to grow, because we'll actually employ more new jobs in the small business market than we do with the big boys. And so, you know, let's try and keep that motivation going forward.
Absolutely. We're talking with Tim Harris, candidate for First District Congressman. We'll continue in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
Continuing our time this morning on A Community Connection, talking with candidate Tim Harris, and we've spent a lot of time this morning talking about you, your views, your overall philosophy. Let's look at world affairs. We kind of touched a little bit on what's going on in South America, Venezuela specifically, but Korea, the Middle East, Afghanistan. There are a lot of other fields that I think as a congressman you would be required to comment on, and while the election isn't for at least several months, we're talking this morning. What should Congress do to provide guidance to the president? Even though its primary job is legislative in duty, it also provides an advisory role for the president.
Well, that's that balance of power we were talking about earlier between the different agencies. I mean, the president, as the executive, is the commander in chief of the armed forces, but you know, most presidents get us involved in military battles, but it's the legislature that has the power of the purse that either funds that or not. You know, we look at Kim Jong-un, and he's talking and pounding his chest about having nuclear capabilities. You know, I can hit Japan, I can hit Guam, you know.
Which, by the way, many people forget Guam is a U.S. territory. Those people are U.S. citizens.
So I'm not a hawk, and I don't want war. I do like the president's stance. Maybe his rhetoric is a little bit more braggadocious, because I think diplomacy and economic sanctions will probably get people in line. But my experience historically, as I look, you know, most dictators are above average intelligence. They're ruthless, but you know what? They want to remain in power. So I'm praying that Kim Jong-un's, you know, chest pounding about nuclear capabilities and all the missiles that he sent off into the Sea of Japan is more to maintain his position of power and authority. I mean, as we look at the Pacific Rim, you know, Korea is very, very important in that, both North and South. And let's not forget, China needs to produce 19 million new jobs just to keep up with their population. So I don't think China can afford a nuclear war. And so hopefully they will see the economic benefit that they have by maybe exercising a little bit of control that they have over North Korea. But, you know, it's pretty scary. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, but North Korea, through Kim Jong-un's grandfather and father and now him, I mean, they've been pounding their chest for a long time. And it's a bully that says, hey, if you don't give me your lunch money, I'm going to beat you up on the playground. Sooner or later, all the kids on the playground kind of have to get together and say, enough is enough. We're not going to let you do that. We're not going to buy you off. You know, we're going to kind of keep you in line. And yet, you know, if in fact he has nuclear capabilities, we cannot afford going into a nuclear holocaust. So, you know, hopefully the economic sanctions will quiet things down a little bit with the help of China and maybe even Russia to maybe quiet this down. We don't need another world war. And yet, I think some strong rhetoric towards North Korea needs to be done with all these missiles that they're launching into the Sea of Japan, and they're saying that they can reach California. I don't know if they can or can't. There's some talk that they have can go 2,000 miles. You know, would that be enough to hit California? Would that be enough to hit Alaska? You know, again, when we look at that, but, you know, South Korea is an ally. Guam, you know, we have to protect. And Japan, I mean, Japan is now a strong, strong ally, and we need to stand with them for their safety and security. So it's a very complex issue that's going on right now, but I'd like a strong stance because we certainly have the firepower. I don't want us to use it. So we have to leverage ourselves with North Korea that says, are you sure you want to go through with this? And I hope that they see the wisdom that that's an absolute losing battle for them.
You're campaigning, and I know that's not your only duty, but that's what we're talking about this morning is your campaign. Where will we see you around the area over the next, let's say, couple of months? I'm sure you're going to be attending some meetings, some public events, just so that people can see your face, shake your hand, and maybe ask them a question that I haven't asked you yet.
The Young Businessmen of Tulsa are having a forum for the five Republican candidates. There is no Democrat candidate that has announced an intention. I'm assuming that at some point in time that may happen, but the five Republican candidates on August 28th at Tiamo's in Tulsa is where the Young Businessmen of Tulsa YBT meets. And so the format isn't really a debate. It's 1 minute of introduction and then two questions that you have 2 minutes each to field. 1 minute for a question from the audience to each of the five candidates, and then a 1 minute closing. So you'll hear 7 minutes from each of the candidates about who they are, what they stand for. That's the first forum that has actually been calendared for August 28th at 11:30 a.m. I invite the people to come and listen to the candidates, and you'll be able to listen to how I differentiate myself because of my negotiation skills and what I call statesmanship that I've been able to bring to the table on behalf of the citizens of Tulsa County for 28 years. That's what differentiates me from the rest of the candidates, and it'll be interesting to listen to us all and get a better feel.
Yes, I think, you know, you see five people up on the stage, Republicans, all varying shades of red, but you will agree and you'll differentiate yourself. Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll so. You know.
Tim Harris, he is a candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, and right now the election is November of next year. Of course, the primary will be coming up before that. Tim, thank you very much for your time this morning, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Hey, God bless you. Thank you for having me here, and I'll fight for our freedoms and liberties in Washington. I'd appreciate the opportunity to have people consider me as their voice in Washington. Take a look at VoteTimHarris.com is my website, and same VoteTimHarris for Facebook. You can get to know a lot more than we've had chance to discuss here today with more detail, and I just appreciate the time that you've given me to present myself to your listeners. God bless you. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harris. News on the way coming up in just a couple of minutes. The Community Connection this morning on 1400 K1, brought to you by First Baptist Church and by Tallgrass Motors.
H.G. Weaver said, "Between the great things we cannot do and the little things we will not do, the danger is